Once you've lasted through the 2 weeks of phase one and rid yourself of your sugar addiction, you are ready to begin adding more carbohydrates to your diet. By this time, the insulin resistance syndrome has disappeared. The cravings for sugars and starches are virtually gone too. It's a fresh start. You'd think that the challenge would be to restrain dieters from adding too many high glycemic index carbs too soon, but just the opposite usually happens. People are reluctant to leave the safety of phase one and begin eating the kinds of foods that made them overweight in the first place. If it was bread or rice that made me fat, why would I want to start eating it again? I don't want to undo all the good I've just done. I certainly don't want to slow my weight loss. Still, there are several good reasons for adding more carbohydrates. First, many are good for you, especially those in fruit. Even bread, if you choose a whole grain type, brings nutritional benefits. Also, it is important for dieters to enjoy their food as much as ever and have a varied array of dishes and ingredients from which to choose. People love to eat, and you can take advantage of that passion even when you can't eat every single thing you want with heedless abandon. Of course, we add the high glycemic index carbs slowly. Usually we recommend that you start with one piece of fruit a day, something that won't provoke a big rise in blood sugar. Apples are fine. Their glycemic index is low, and there's lots of beneficial fiber in the skin. Grapefruit is another safe choice, as are berries and cantaloupe. At this stage, we advise patients not to have fruit with breakfast, however. Sometimes it will cause a big jolt of insulin if it's eaten first thing in the day, triggering cravings for more. And while fruit has lots of fiber, it also contains substantial amounts of fructose or fruit sugar. So save it for after lunch or dinner. Another carb that can be added back in the early days of phase two is cereal, either something eaten cold like Kellogg's All Brand with extra fiber or real, not instant, oatmeal. The South Beach diet never requires you to weigh food, but we will counsel dieters adding rice back into their diets to eat servings no bigger than a tennis ball. And don't choose the biggest potatoes in the supermarket bin. In any event, if it's oat bran you want, we suggest that you have it with a sugar substitute and non-fat milk. Adding an egg, which contains protein and good fat, will slow the absorption of the carbs. If you decide to have your new carbohydrate with dinner instead of breakfast, you can have a slice of whole grain bread at night without fear of doing any damage. But you can't have it at breakfast and dinner, at least not at the beginning. Here's the principle to adding those carbs back safely. Do it gradually and attentively. The goal is to eat more carbs again while continuing to lose weight. If you add an apple and a slice of bread a day and you're still dropping pounds, that's great. If you try having an apple, two slices of bread, and a banana daily, and notice that your weight loss has stalled, you've gone too far. It's time to cut back, or try some different carbs and monitor the results. You'll go on that cautious way as long as you're in phase two, eating the most beneficial carbs and paying attention to how they affect you. I'm not talking about weighing yourself every day. I'm actually opposed to that. You can usually tell when you've put on weight, and if you can't, your clothes will let you know. You should also be aware of foods that increase cravings. No two people will experience this phase the same way. Some dieters can have pasta once a week and experience no detrimental effects. Others have to avoid pasta, but are all right with a sweet potato. Because we want a diet that's flexible and adaptable to your tastes and habits, you'll have to figure this dynamic out for yourself. Our goal is to help you arrive at a diet filled with foods that you love eating. These rules are sufficient for you to create your own version of the plan. The most successful dieters we found are the ones who try every recipe they can think of and take advantage of all the foods and ingredients permitted. They make interesting use of herbs and spices such as horseradish, hot peppers, garlic, cinnamon, and nutmeg. One patient invented a new soup made with every green vegetable he could find. Boredom is the enemy here. It leads people back to their old habits, so at every stage, it's best to make this diet as lively and diverse as possible. The most effective strategy for achieving your goals is to make use of creative substitutions. This is one of the pillars of this diet, replacing bad carbs with good ones so that you end up eating the things you love, only slightly different. We've already discussed the staples: whole grain bread instead of white bread, sweet potatoes instead of white potatoes, brown rice or wild rice instead of white rice, and whole grain pasta. These substitutions will take you a long way towards making this diet effective, but there are plenty of other tricks. Here's a terrific one to take the place of mashed potatoes, which everyone loves and, of course, are absolute diet busters. Instead of potatoes, steam some cauliflower, either fresh or frozen. It makes no difference. You can even do this in the microwave. Once it's soft, mash it with a little liquid butter substitute. The brand, I can't believe it's not butter, tastes terrific and has no trans fatty acids. Then mix in a little Land O'Lakes brand non-fat half and half substitute, which tastes good and is healthy. Salt and pepper to taste, and you've got something that quite honestly can compete any day with the real thing. Back when we first started the diet, before the trend of wrap sandwiches had swept through restaurants, we had some success getting patients to replace bread with lettuce leaves. They take sandwich contents, meat, fish, cheese, vegetables, even condiments, and roll them up in crisp lettuce. They found to their surprise that the bread wasn't as crucial a part of the sandwich as they had thought it was. The filling was what tasted good and satisfied their hunger, much more than the bread. We also suggested lots of concoctions that came right out of the 1950s, food stuffed inside other food, like tomatoes filled with tuna salad. We had people trying this with any vegetable large enough and strong enough to withstand such treatment. Stuffed eggplant, zucchini, and artichokes were big favorites. We tried a few dessert tricks, too. People who love chocolate almost always have lots of it, but they don't realize how satisfying even smaller amounts can be. Instead of some big chocolate dessert, try strawberries dipped in dark chocolate, which has less sugar than the milk chocolate variety. A few of these and you're satisfied. But in truth, you've had relatively small amounts of chocolate and quite a bit of fruit. We also told people to slice bananas, freeze them, and then dip the slices in sugar-free chocolate sauce. It satisfies any sweet tooth, again, with a small amount of chocolate. Using the strategy of substitution, you can continue eating things that other programs would banish forevermore, including some of the delicacies I've mentioned. As we've seen, the equation behind most obesity is simple. The faster the sugars and starches you eat are processed and absorbed into your bloodstream, the fatter you get. Therefore, anything that speeds the process by which your body digests carbohydrates is bad for your diet, and anything that slows it down is good. Digestion is simply the action of your stomach and intestines breaking food down into its components. Anything that keeps food intact longer is beneficial for people trying to lose weight. Keeping that in mind, it's important to recognize that the process of digestion begins even before you swallow your food. In fact, it starts the moment you start preparing it. Example, raw broccoli is crunchy, hard, cold, and covered with a layer of nutritious fiber. If you eat it that way, your stomach has really got to work in order to get at the carbs. That's a good thing. Of course, outside of a cocktail party's crudité table, we almost never eat broccoli in the raw. We wash it. Then we throw away the toughest part of the stalk. Then we cut it up and boil it or steam it until it's soft and warm. That's also a fair approximation of what your stomach does to food. Through the combination of churning muscles and the potent gastric juices and acids it produces, your stomach physically tears food to shreds and partly liquefies it. Whether it's in a pot, on the stove, or in your stomach, the same essential process happens to the broccoli and everything else you eat. In the case of processed foods, digestion begins even earlier. In fact, it starts long before the food hits the supermarket shelf. Consider that loaf of sliced white bread. First, the wheat is stripped of the bran and fiber. Then it's pulverized into the finest white flour. The baking process puffs it up into light, airy slices of bread. No wonder your stomach makes such quick work of it. A slice of white bread hits your bloodstream with the same jolt you'd get by eating a tablespoon of sugar right from the bowl. Marie Antoinette would have a hard time telling it from cake, and the truth is that there's no real difference. Where is real old-fashioned bread, the coarse, chewy kind, with a thick crust and visible pieces of grain, the type you can only buy from a bakery or a health food store, puts your stomach to work. It, too, is made of wheat, but the grains haven't been processed to death. You may even see pieces of bran there in the bread. It does contain starches, which are just chains of sugar molecules, but they are bound up with the fiber, and so digestion takes longer. As a result, the sugars are released gradually into the bloodstream. If there's no sudden surge in blood sugar, your pancreas won't produce as much insulin, and you won't get the exaggerated craving for more carbs. This is crucial to understanding how your body operates. The more food is pre-processed, the more fattening it will be. The good news, of course, is that you can control the glycemic index of your food in part just by choosing how you'll prepare it. Take a potato, for instance, an incredibly versatile vegetable. You can do 100 things with it, from soup to vodka, and what you do with it determines how fattening it is. The worst way, from the glycemic index perspective, baked. The process of baking it renders the starches most easily accessible to your digestive system. Slightly better, believe it or not, that baked potato will be less fattening, topped with a dollop of low-fat cheese or sour cream. The calorie count will be slightly higher, but the fat contained in the cheese or the sour cream will slow down the digestive process, thereby lessening the amount of insulin the potato prompts your body to make. Still, don't think that when you're at the mall and stop for a quick baked potato at one of those franchise places that you're having a healthy snack. A baked potato in the mid-afternoon practically guarantees that you'll be starving for carbs by dinner. You'd be better off having a small ice cream or even a dark chocolate bar instead of that baked potato. What's better than baking a potato? The answer is mashing or boiling, due to the difference in the cooking process, but also because you'd probably eat them with a little butter or sour cream, and the fat slows the digestive process. Even French fries are better than baked, believe it or not, because of the fat in which they are cooked. But of course, the same is true of potato chips, but don't be misled. None of these are good choices for someone on the South Beach diet. The type of potato you eat is also a big factor in all this. Red-skinned potatoes are the highest in carbs. White-skinned are better. New potatoes, better yet. In every vegetable or fruit, the younger when picked, the lower the carb count. If you must indulge, do so sparingly, and try sweet potatoes instead of white.